Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sir.
Hello, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I was reading your 10 thoughts, as I'm apt to do. It's a Sunday tradition. And at the bottom of your 10 thoughts, you had a link to a tweet, which we just discussed at the very end of the last segment. Mike Leach was quoting off some great philosophers of all time. And he quoted the great Sasquatch, in which he said, "Believe in yourself even when no one else will." And I think that's a very poignant thought, and I appreciate it. And I wanted to ask you this. One of your buddies, Andy Staples, he has written pretty extensively about how so many colleges are trying to hire these offensive gurus, and all of them have one common link, and it's they're all Leach disciples, and they're all guys that either played for him or they're guys that were either worked for him and whatnot. And why do you think that he's been available for a long time? Why are colleges so afraid of going and getting this guy? Because he's had two of the worst jobs in all of college football, and he's won at levels that neither has seen since.
How long do we have? 2 hours?
That's a fair point.
Look, it's a lot of it is athletics, is groupthink. They all hang out in the same group. They talk to one another. They live in their own world. They create a kind of an athletics bubble. They're, for whatever reason, I guess because of the money, they have turned intercollegiate athletics into a land of paranoia when it's frankly supposed to just be fun. It's not supposed to be this serious. The truth is, I mean, how many programs in college football truly go in the next season with the chance to win the national championship?
I'm going to say next year, right now, I think Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and I think you could make a case. I think you could make a case for Georgia right now.
Okay, so in a typical year, 4 to 6 programs have a chance to win the national championship. Is that fair?
You can correct me if I'm wrong. Those are the four that come to my mind that I think that will be in it all year. Obviously, every single year we always have a team or two that kind of emerges from the pack. Oklahoma, I just don't believe in Hurts enough to think
sure,
that.
Sure, but I'm talking about in a typical generic year.
Fewer than 10.
Absolutely fewer than 10. In college basketball, how many programs truly in a typical year, and I know the list changes year to year, but in a typical year, how many programs truly have a chance to win the national championship? I didn't say get to the Sweet 16. I didn't even say get to the Final Four. I said win the national championship. 6?
Yeah, Gary points out you have to be a top 10 efficient offense and a top 10 defense. So that's what we've seen almost every year, with the exception of when UConn made the run under Kevin Ollie. That's been pretty much the trend for the last 15 years, so that's going to be no more than 5-6 teams.
So it's kind of that deal of know who you are, know what your strengths are, know what your weaknesses are, know what your upside is, know who you are. But for whatever reason, people can't do that. No one's willing to say at a Kentucky or a Missouri or an Ole Miss or a Mississippi State or whatnot, they're just kind of unwilling to say, hey, I guess there's a chance that we could catch lightning in a bottle and win a national championship. But realistically, it's not going to happen. Let's hire somebody that's going to shake it up, be different, have fun, excite the fans, and then see what happens. And then if it doesn't work, right, so what? Try again. But for whatever reason, people won't do that. And so a guy like Mike Leach sits out there in Pullman, Washington, and he says he wants to leave, or he's willing to leave. He's willing to go someplace else, and he'd get it done. And it would be fun to watch at an SEC school. I mean, Tennessee sort of went down that path a little bit, and they went another direction. But I don't know the answer to that question. I'm kind of starting to have that same question about college basketball with the guy that I'm covering.
Honestly, actually going to be my next question. Why do you think it took Kermit Davis so long? Because, you know, you kept hearing if this guy gets a big job, he can get it done. And, you know, Ole Miss is not a big job. But right now he's got Ole Miss, a team that finished dead last in the SEC. He's got them basically probably two or three conference games away from being in the tournament.
Yeah, it's fair. He's 8-4 in the league. They're, I think, 30 in the net this morning.
That is correct.
So, you know, they've got to go to South Carolina. It's a tough game. Then they get Georgia at home. That should be a win. They still go to Arkansas. It's a very winnable game. They still go to Missouri. It's a very winnable game. And they've got home games against Tennessee and Kentucky, which, you know, are going to be difficult to win. But if you have the right wins, they become huge opportunities. And who knows? You just have to be better one night. My point is a guy like Kermit Davis is almost 60 years old. His own alma mater passed him up to hire Rick Ray.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's weird. And the guy, look, I'm not saying this to kiss ass or anything. I think you know me better than that. The guy just out-coaches people. I watch it.
He out-coached Bruce Pearl on Wednesday night for the second time this year. And he did it when he was at MTSU. He's done it before. Like, it's unbelievable.
He's taken this team that I covered a year ago. I wrote about this in my 10 Weekend Thoughts last night, that I think sometimes Kermit Davis gets a little flummoxed at guys like me who ask questions about, you know, this team's confidence level. And do you worry about, you know, a couple of losses turning into five or six losses? Do you just worry about their mindset? And he looks at you kind of like, I don't know what you're getting at. And in fairness to him, he was with another team last season. Excuse me. And in fairness to us who are asking the questions, we were on the beat last year and we watched these exact same kids kind of, I don't like the word quit, but I'll use the word fold. He watched these exact same kids kind of fold. And he's got them playing, they've played pretty efficient offense all year, and suddenly they're playing efficient defense and they're winning late games. They are a lucky shot by Florida away from being 9-3 in the league right now. I mean, so my point is not about Ole Miss it's just there's this conventional wisdom that you got to go get the next young guy. You got to go get the hot young guy, get the guy that's a protege. I think sometimes you got to think about going and getting the master.
Yeah, I mean, to me, at a certain point, you've got to get a guy that's got a record and a record that suggests that he's done it at a pretty high level. I mean, we saw this guy on a national stage outcoach Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo is going to be, if he's not in the Hall of Fame, I think he is. I think he's in the Hall of Fame already, right?
Yeah. But I mean, he is or will be or whatnot. I mean, he's a tremendous coach. I mean, so you start to wonder when you look at a guy like Kermit Davis right now, you start to wonder what would have happened if somebody would have hired this cat at 40, at 45. What would he have done?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is he would have won big. And I think there's this opinion of Leach that, well, you know, he's just so crazy and he likes pirates or whatever. Who cares, man? It's just football. His football system works. And at programs where, frankly, you're not going to win the national championship, why not have some fun? Take a shot. See what happens. He just took Washington State to, what, 9-3, 10-2?
10-2, you know, and then they had that snow game against Washington, and really the snow played into – Washington's hands, because obviously they're more of a catch and throw type offense, and so when you know they lost that, but if they would want to win that, they were probably going to win the Pac-12, and they were going to be sitting right there, and the committee was going to have to make a decision of whether or not to leave the Pac-12 out.
Yeah, in worst case, they would have gone to the Rose Bowl, and if you're Washington State and you're in the Rose Bowl discussion in late November, it's a win.
Yeah,
that's a win. I mean, that's. You got invited to the Miss America pageant. You know, no one ever said you were going to win the thing. I mean, just, I don't know. I think there's too much. It's like a conventional wisdom group think, and no AD wants to be the guy that says, you know what, I'm going to buck the trend that I'm going to go get this guy, and I know it's going to be a little different, and I know there's a chance that it won't work, but I think that's the other part of it, too, is everybody is so scared of failure. I don't know why. There's lots of failure in sports, and if you fail, try something new.
Yeah, I think one of the arguments that
I've heard consistently with Leach with, well, you know, he's got a ceiling. It's 8 or 9 wins. And I'm usually discussing this with people that don't realize that their program is maybe an 8 or 9 win season. Like that kind of has a ceiling of 8 or 9 wins. And it blows my mind. Like there's this idea of why would you go get that when you could go get this assistant who has no track record and chances are is going to fail, because if you look at every ounce of evidence, that's kind of what happens. So you end up hiring a guy because he comes from usually somewhere else successful, because you think that all of a sudden that's going to make you a national champion.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think a lot of programs are sitting there at 4 and 5 wins, and they say, well, you know, I mean, he can only win 9 games a year. Well, how much would you take 9 wins right now?
Yes, that's a question that I think far too often doesn't get asked. Okay, speaking of other coaches that are back, knowing you, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the AAF has not exactly been on TV1, but I wanted to point this out. You've known me now, I think, for the better part of 6 or 7 years, and one of my all-time favorite human beings will and forever be Coach Steve Spurrier, HBC, if you will. How good is it just to have him back? I mean, this guy's sitting here in a developmental football league, and he's still back to his old parlor tricks. He's got Garrett Gilbert throwing for 330-something yards a game, a guy that's never been really productive at any level. He's sitting here and putting up 40 points with the guy, and then he's taking shots at Tennessee, taking shots at the Redskins. What are some of, from your days covering Auburn, your days covering the SECB, what are some of your favorite Spurrier moments?
He came to Mobile for something when I was down there. I guess something with the Senior Bowl or something with one of the Gottfrieds or something. And I ended up having a few minutes with him, and he just starts telling stories, and they're just funny. I mean, he's along the lines of what we just talked about. He's not a conventional coach. He never was. He was never the guy that got to the building at 4:30 in the morning and stayed until 11. I don't think he took it as seriously as maybe some other people. Now, he was super competitive and wanted to win, and he would win and talk a little trash. And if you talk some trash to him, he'd giggle at it and like it and use it as motivation. I mean, to Steve Spurrier's credit, and maybe we'll discover that this wasn't true one day, but I seriously doubt it. I think for him, football has always just been fun. It's not been life or death. He likes to call plays. He likes to see if the plays work. If the plays don't work, I think he likes to go back and kind of see why the play didn't work and try it again. And he loves to do the thing about Auburn and the building burned down. And he says
the library burned down. Yeah, it was a shame. There were 15 books that still hadn't been colored yet.
And the stuff in Tennessee about the Citrus Bowl was, I'm sure for Tennessee fans, it was frustrating. But on the other side.
Underrated one. After they won in Knoxville in 94, he had the Florida Orange and Blue Band play Rocky Top.
And so if you're a Tennessee fan, it was maddening. But on the other hand, you had to laugh a little bit. Because, the sun comes up the next day. You got to go to work. It doesn't really matter. I just think he was fun. So I think it's great. Look, I haven't watched the AAF. I watch a lot of basketball. I don't have time, et cetera. But I have read stuff about it. I think the concept is a good one. The way that they're doing it is good. It's obvious that people will watch football for the sake of football. And then if it ends up being entertaining football, great. And they're trying some things that I think the NFL doesn't have to view them as competition. And so if anything, I think the NFL gets to try some things, whether it's for broadcast improvements or whether it's, to experiment with some stuff. I think the NFL gets this free testing ground, which is, if you're the NFL and you're smart, you use that wisely, because that's the opportunity to see what works and what doesn't on a smaller stage where there's no risk for you. And then at some point you have, if you decide, for example, hey, we're going to get rid of kickoffs, which I think is something that's going to happen in football. Now that you've seen another league do it, you can say, okay, well, it's not the end of the world. Maybe there's some people a handful of people bitch and moan about it, but for the most part, it's fine. People just like football for football's sake, and if getting rid of kickoffs makes football safer, and it does, And if getting rid of kickoffs reduces the amount of injuries that happen in football, and it probably does, then it's probably the thing you should do, and let's do it. And, so I think you'll see the NFL maybe get more transparent with the replay. People have enjoyed being able to hear what the replay official is thinking and stuff. And I think people like to be able to hear the coaches. They like to be able to hear the quarterbacks. They want things to be more interactive. TV is, you know, the stadiums are going to get smaller. The TV packages are going to get bigger. I think people want more and more interaction. That's been proven. And this league gives what the AAF has, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you've watched significantly more of it than I have. It gives you they have the opportunity to try something, and along the lines of not being afraid to fail. If they try something and it's a total disaster, you just go, hey, it didn't work. Next.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they have accepted, like, I think far too often people try to view the success of a developmental or minor leagues in terms of ticket sales. Well, there are lots of minor league sports that have been able to sell a lot of tickets. You don't really become profitable. Like the payroll's so much. Like the model is you need, if you're going to be, you know, in minor league baseball, essentially the big league club is footing the salary bill. So your job is to make sure you keep the lights on. So far too often people view it based on what's the attendance going to be. To me, what the success of this league is going to be completely dependent upon, does this league keep television contracts? Because if it becomes a television product, if it's an entertaining product that providers are willing to still pay for, then I think it can be successful. And I guess that still remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, once the novelty wears off, will people watch it? But when they get a better rating on an opening night than, what was it, Thunder Rockets that night was on primetime on ABC, and they beat that, and they beat something else, excuse me, that's slipping my mind right now. It's hard to ignore those numbers.
All right.
I mean, it's hard to ignore the reality that people like football, and people will watch football for the sake of watching football, and that there is an audience out there that not only is that their favorite sport, it is basically their only sport, and they will watch it year-round if it's offered to them.
All right, you mentioned watching basketball, and we had All-Star Weekend, and a team that you watch probably more than any other team is the Oklahoma City Thunder. So What is a Hamadou Diablo, or Diallo?
I'm not sure what a Hamadou Diablo is.
Diallo, good name.
Hamadou Diallo is a rookie guard from Kentucky. Really athletic. They took him in the second round, took a flyer, and he's played some minutes this year with some of the issues that the Thunder have had at the two guard. I don't think he's going to get meaningful playoff minutes if he gets any playoff minutes, but he's one of those guys that Sam Presti has kind of made a secondary living on, Jeffrey. He gets guys like Andre Roberson late in the first round, does the little D-League thingy with him. It ends up working. Unfortunately for him, he had a severe knee injury and he hasn't played this year, but it doesn't make the draft choice a bad one. He took Hamadou Diallo and Deontay Burton in the second round of this draft, and both guys have played meaningful minutes for a playoff team. That's what Presti's just really good. It's the part of Sam Presti that he doesn't get credit for. People talk about the Harden trade incessantly, and that's fair. People talk about Durant leaving incessantly. That's probably fair. People give him credit for turning Sabonis, who was a first-round pick, and Victor Oladipo into Paul George and keeping him, and that's fair on the positive side. But I think what he's really done well is just had tremendous draft success. I mean, Steven Adams with the 12th pick is a high-level player. They traded for Jeremy Grant. He's been very good for them. They took Terrence Ferguson late in the first round, and in his second year at the age of 20, he's one of those two-way wings that everybody in the NBA is looking for, and they have him on a cheap rookie deal. He's just really been good at the draft, and Diallo is one of those guys that, as you saw in the dunk competition, he's crazy athletic. The players like him. He works hard, all that stuff. So, you know, what's his upside? His upside's pretty good. Potentially he never really gives them anything productive, but when you take a second-round flyer on guys like that, if they don't work out, they don't work out. It's no loss. But the teams that don't utilize the draft efficiently are the ones that, it's so, as as you know, it's so hard to win consistently if you don't have success out of the draft. And that's the reason that the Thunder, they're not a title contender this year, but they're a contender to maybe make the Western Conference Finals. They're certainly a contender next year if and when Kevin Durant leaves Golden State, and it's because of what they've been able to achieve in the draft. No other big reason.
I'm wrapping up here with Neil McCready. Again, you can follow him on Twitter, at Neil McCready. You can hear his two podcasts, the Oxford Exxon podcast, available each and every weekday. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts can be found, and the greatest pod in the South. If you were in charge of the Grizzlies, and this summer's obviously a big summer for them, but they have a fairly significant 25 games remaining, not in terms of playoff positioning, but in terms of really what their future is going to look like. If you were in charge of the Grizzlies, what would you start doing this summer?
Well, I would do everything I could to stockpile picks. And I know that they're trying to win enough to convey that Boston pick and move it and get that off and start fresh. I'd have to reevaluate if I'm Hera. I'd have to first stare in the mirror and reevaluate myself and what role I'm playing in decisions that are being made. And then I have to reevaluate who the decision makers are. I'd have to take a really hard look at the New Orleans Pelicans and say, what can I do to make sure that in 4 or 5 years, if Jaren Jackson Jr. is as good as we think he's going to be, that he's not begging to leave, demanding to leave. I've got to surround him with the right kind of people. And if that means a 2-year major rebuild, which is real risky in a town like Memphis, I get it. But if that's what it means, then that's what it means. And you get the right scouting people and development people, and you let people make decisions and you support them at an ownership level. And if that's building around Mike Conley, so be it. But if it's not, this is the summer that you've got to make that deal, and you've got to, whatever that entails, you've got to do it. You've got to start accumulating some picks here in the next couple of years, and you've got to draft young people. You can't count on free agency to save you in a market like Memphis or Oklahoma City. You've got to draft well, and you've got to develop well, and you've got to have just a real solid paradigm plan and stick with it. You can't change midstream all the time. It just doesn't work.
Neil, we appreciate the time, my man.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.